2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Baseball America Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer, joined today by Arizona Republic Diamondbacks beat writer Nick Pecoro. Nick's been covering the Diamondbacks system for us for a few years. And Nick, this was a really interesting year to do the Diamondbacks system. They failed to sign first-round pick Matt McClain. The big league club is in a little bit of a transition period now. Patrick Corbin left in free agency. AJ Pollock is, as of this recording, still a free agent, has not signed. Paul Goldschmidt's been traded. It's a little bit of a turning the page for the franchise. But as that's happened, we've seen some prospects kind of rise up. Before we dive into the top 10 itself, just what's your overall sense of where this team is, you know, as a whole, big league level, all the way down through all the levels of the organization?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Kyle. I think you're right that it is in a bit of a transition period. It's in a bit of a confusing period, I think, for a lot of fans and a lot of people looking on that, you know, you trade Goldschmidt, you have these other guys that are likely departing as free agents. Corbin already has, Pollock probably will. And yet they haven't really torn it all the way down, and are still kind of making some comments publicly. Torrey Lovello recently last week just was talking about how they're not rebuilding. They love their team, I believe was his quote. And it's just kind of hard to see them as a contender. Their organization, you know, top to bottom, they've peeled a lot of pieces away over the last couple of years to try to take advantage of this window that they had with all of those guys. So it's not like they've been building, you know, the farm system up exclusively lately. But, you know, they do have some interesting players, and I kind of feel like there's a little bit more upside in the system than there has been in years. I don't think that they're in a bad place as far as the farm system goes, but they definitely have some room to improve. And, you know, I don't know where the publication is going to have them, you know, organizationally, where they're going to be ranked. I would imagine it's somewhere in the middle or somewhere in the back third, the bottom third. But I wouldn't be surprised if we look up a year from now and they're in a much stronger position compared to the rest of baseball.
No question. You know, we mentioned they forfeited a first-round pick to sign Zach Greinke, and the player they used their first pick of that draft on, Anthony Greer, has not lived up to some hopes and expectations. 2017 first-rounder Paven Smith had a pretty rough first season. 2018 first-rounder Matt McClain, as we mentioned, didn't sign. So the draft, there's been some misses and missed opportunities. But even with that, you mentioned there is a sense they've hit on some guys taken in later rounds and internationally, especially now that they're free from the Yoan Lopez penalty. And with that, their top prospect, their new number one, is an international guy, Jazz Chisholm. As you were putting this list together and talking with evaluators both inside and outside the Diamondbacks organization, was it crystal clear that Jazz had become the number one prospect in the system, or was there still a little bit of debate with him and some other guys?
I guess we should also mention that Jazz was signed at a time when they were still in that penalty box from Yoan Lopez. So give them credit, give Craig Shipley, the signing scout, a lot of credit for seeing him. Although I think that everybody with the club would probably admit that they weren't envisioning Jazz turning into this kind of prospect, at least this quickly. As far as how he got up there, it was a little bit of a debate with people that I spoke to, people that seen the system, and people that are in the organization as well. I think that as the minor league season was winding down, it was a lot of debate between Chisholm and Dalton Varsho. And then, you know, after Duplantier came out healthy in the fall league and looked as good as he looked, I think that there were some people that were arguing for him again. I think that ultimately it just came down to a guy who has some health problems with the arm in Duplantier, just the questions that are associated with that. I don't think anybody has any question that when Duplantier is out there and pitching, he's very good. The question is just how often he can do it and just sort of the risk associated with that when you're talking about putting together a press list. And Chisholm obviously has questions of his own, right? I mean, there's a lot of swing and miss in his game. I don't think that he's anything close to a polished defender yet, a finished product defensively. So I mean, there's questions about whether that can improve and whether he can stay at short. He has everything you would want to see out of a shortstop. But there's definitely questions. It just came down to the upside that he can provide and the fact that he had such an explosive season last year and coming off the fact that he missed a lot of the year before with a knee injury. So you kind of feel like there's probably even more room for development than normal for a guy his age.
Yeah, with Jazz, you mentioned he had the knee injury. He came back this year and really did not do all that great, at least on paper, at low Class A Kane County. Received a late season promotion to Visalia and really went off there. All the offensive numbers ticked up. Some of that is the Cal League and the park in Visalia, but I know when I was making calls for the Cal League Top 20, which I do every year, every opposing manager was saying, hey, this is real. It's electric, you know, the hands, just everything about him, both in the box and in the field and on the base pass. And then I went out and saw him in the Fall League for the first time, and I mean, he blew me away. He was really kind of one of the revelations of the Fall League, just the way scouts saw him. He was on the taxi squad playing twice a week, and still, he made a big impression out there. What were you hearing in terms of just the improvement he makes? It's a pretty long way going from hitting 220 and striking out a bunch in low A to being the talk of the Arizona Fall League in a span of 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that stood out to me that people with the Diamondbacks were saying was maybe just sort of he just had a fire lit under him when he got to Visalia. I think that some of the guys in the Diamondbacks front office came from Boston, and a comparison that came to mind for them was Hanley Ramirez in the low minors. And it kind of just felt like, you know, Hanley just turned it on when he got to the big leagues or when he got, you know, further along in his career, because he just didn't feel challenged. He didn't feel like he belonged in the lower minor leagues. And I think that there was some of that with Chisholm. I think he was disappointed to have to be back at Kane County for the second year in a row. And I think that when he finally got up to Visalia, it was like, okay, here we go. This is where I should have been all along. I should have started the year at this level. Let me show what I can do.
He certainly played up to his competition every time he was challenged. It'll be interesting to see him move forward next year into Double-A. You hit on this a little bit earlier, but that debate for number two between John Duplantier and Dalton Varsho, just to give readers a behind-the-scenes view back here at Baseball America, you and I had a lot of phone calls and conversations about that discussion, and it seemed like it came down to, John Duplantier, healthy John Duplantier is, talent-wise, the number two guy, but there's a lot greater confidence that Dalton Varsho, when we look back 10 years from now, might have accumulated a better big league career just because of the health aspects. Overall, just in this process, how are those two things weighted? How close were they for you? Just what was the overall Varsho versus Duplantier matchup, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it, and I think that was a big part of it. With Varsho, I feel like the floor is pretty high. I think that with him, he's almost certainly going to be a big leaguer of some kind and a productive one, probably for a while. I could see him having a long career. He's done nothing but hit since he's been a professional. He obviously hit well in a second tier college league as well. But the questions that come with that from not playing at a major conference, to coming into pro ball, he put those to rest right away. If he winds up sticking behind the plate, which it sure seems like more and more people believe that he will, the scouts that I spoke to that saw him a lot in Visalia saw improvement, and they see a guy that has a lot of energy, that wants to learn, that has good baseball instincts, all of that. If that's a left-handed hitting catcher with a little bit of pop in the bat, that's obviously a hugely valuable piece. Add in that he can run the way that he can run, the fact that if catching doesn't work out, or even if it does, that he can move around the diamond perhaps, that this is like an Austin Barnes type of athlete, maybe the grueling nature of catching prevents him from playing, behind the plate 130 times, but maybe he's behind the plate 100 times and out at second base or left field or wherever, another 30 or 40, I don't know. That's another way that he can be a highly valuable player. So that's why a lot of people were, you know, there were a handful of people that were pushing for him or really, you know, would tell me like, man, you know, I'd have no problem if you put Dalton Varsho as our number one, you know, guys in the organization saying that. So, yeah, I mean, Duplantier, I do feel like there's a chance that, you know, I could look up a year from now and Duplantier stays healthy, makes 25, 30 starts, you know, however many of them in the big leagues, and being like, oh, man, I really should have had him as the number one. But I just did feel like the health track record dating back to Rice, you know, stretching into his first season as a pro. Now, he did stay healthy in his first full year, but then popping back up again. And just like the level of caution that the club, you know, kind of exercised with handling him coming back from his injuries also gave me a little bit of pause. You know, they were just taking it so careful with him. It just makes you wonder how long it's going to last.
Yeah, there's no question. And you mentioned it seemed encouraging that first season he came out in 2017, ran through the A-ball levels, led, not only did they lead the minors in ERA, but he actually had the lowest ERA of any starting pitcher since Justin Verlander when in 2005, and did it while staying healthy the whole season and staying strong through the season. He really finished strong. So you thought, hey, maybe he's turned the corner here, turned the page, and then this season right away he's on the DL and has another flare-up later. At the same time, though, and you alluded to this a little bit, you know, during the season when we were doing some Southern League calls, everyone liked him, but it was, you know, still 92-94. Fall League came around, and it seemed like that's when he really got back to full health. When I saw him, it was one of the best pitchers I'd seen all year anywhere. It was 94-96. Both the slider and curveball were getting plus grades from scouts and attendance. And, you know, the guy they were seeing that night was not just a mid-rotation starter. It was possibly more. And even on his, you know, quote-unquote bad days, people still see probably a three or a lot of number four starter. So it seems like the talent's there pretty consistently, even when he's quote-unquote bad. It's just, like you said, that the health, and I feel like you can look at it one of two ways. One hand, everyone gets hurt. You look at our list of pitching prospects in the minors, and almost all of them have had an injury. On the other hand, repeated injury after repeated injury after repeated injury, it does start to take a toll.
Yeah, and you did allude to something that I heard, even dating back to his 2017 season, that really strong first full year that he had. It depended on the scout that you talked to, but some guys that would, you know, that crossed paths with him in May saw a way different guy than those that crossed paths with him in July. It does seem like the quality of this stuff can kind of fluctuate from outing to outing. Look, I mean, I've covered enough baseball to know that that's the case with a lot of guys. That was the case with Patrick Corbin just this past season. In April, he was 2 or 3 miles an hour up from what he was the rest of the season in terms of fastball velocity. Now he was still able to maintain his effectiveness throughout the season, and just like Duplantier was able to maintain his effectiveness. But it does give scouts a little bit of pause to get too excited about a guy if they're seeing different, like kind of vastly different versions of him in the minors, because you just don't know how the lesser version is going to play at the big league level.
Absolutely. From the outside looking in, it would seem like number one, two, and three prospects, Chisholm, Varsho, Duplantier, is kind of the tier one, and then it seems like there is a drop-off as you move from, you know, number four, five, six, guys who are high upside but much further away. In the course of your reporting, is that, you know, fair to say that, you know, one to three is kind of the tier one of D-backs prospects, and there is a little bit of a shade of difference moving into numbers, you know, four, five, six?
Yeah, I mean, definitely prior to the Carson Kelly acquisition, I guess it just sort of depends on where you rank Carson Kelly. He's a guy that I obviously didn't write the report on him because he wasn't on the Diamondbacks at the time that the Cardinals report was being written. I don't know just how gung-ho people would be in terms of pushing him up into that next group. Obviously, the Diamondbacks think very highly of him. But the next tier behind them is kind of the guys you can really dream on, and the guys with pretty huge upside, but guys that are just so far away and you know, their paths are just so uncertain because there's so many questions and so many things for them still to kind of prove, over the next couple of years. We could look up, you know, I mean, Christian Robinson has all the ability in the world. I mean, he could be Eloy Jimenez a year from now, right? I mean, and Perdomo could be, you know, a big prospect in his own right, there's just so much uncertainty with them.
Yeah, that was an interesting discussion, you know, those two. Again, Robinson kind of has some more name recognition just from being the big bonus guy. What, in your discussions with evaluators, ultimately led you to rank Perdomo ahead of Robinson?
I think that the two things with Perdomo, kind of the ease with which he plays shortstop and the fact that he's such a no-brainer of a big league shortstop in evaluators' minds. Everything is just smooth. Everything is easy. It just looks like he makes plays effortlessly, which is, you know, that's what the really good big league shortstops look like, right? And then the other thing is the plan of attack, the fact that he has, you know, a really good eye. He just seems to know what he's doing when he goes up there at the plate. He's hunting for his pitch. He's able to lay off the bad ones. And guys that have that kind of plate discipline, that kind of strike zone awareness, and, you know, can mix in, obviously, the ability to impact the baseball a little bit, those guys don't turn into nothing, usually. You know, those guys don't flame out. Those are big leaguers, one way or the other. Maybe he's a bench player in the long run. Maybe he's a super utility type. Maybe he's a whole lot more than that. Now, Christian Robinson, like, yeah, that guy could end up... like I said, we could be talking about him as a top 50 prospect in baseball a year from now. We also could see him as, you know, maybe he never gets out of high A, right? I mean, that's just the kind of profile that we have with him right now. And that's, you know, no fault of his own. In a lot of ways, he's from a country that doesn't have an awful lot of big league, professional baseball infrastructure, I should say. He has limited experience against upper level arms. And that said, he held his own really well considering his age, this past year. But you know, there's still some swing and miss concerns. And he just hasn't done it at high enough levels and exhibited the same, sort of, I don't want to call it mastery, but like, you know, you know, ability, I suppose, at the plate as others yet.
No, absolutely. It's going to be really interesting to watch Christian Robinson this upcoming season. You mentioned, you know, the potential to be a top 50 prospect, but there's also some things to work on. I know for me, he's going to be one guy. I'm going to be very curious to see how he fares this upcoming season. Moving into the back of this list, we mentioned, you know, they've had some troubles at the beginning of their drafts, but they found some guys in the second, third rounds, and in one case in particular, in a double-digit round, and they've had some success there. When you were putting together the back of this list, how many names were really in consideration? I think it's fair to say the top six or seven were probably safely top 10, but overall, how many names at the back of the list were really in consideration for you?
I think it kind of started to crystallize maybe like the top 25 or so, and I don't want to draw the line firmly there. We're going to be on this list one way or the other. Maybe the last five were a little bit more up in the air. And I think that there were probably three or four guys that I kind of felt bad leaving out that you know how it is. Like you do these lists because you want to be a little bit ahead of the curve, right? And so there's a few guys that you kind of just want to sneak on there so you can be like, you see, I told you a year later to keep an eye on this guy. And if there were a few of those guys that got left off. They're mostly Latin American signs. Like, I guess a couple guys like Jorge Barrosa and Leover Peguero, a couple of guys that come to mind for me. But by and large, I felt like there's depth in the system, but there's not so much that it was like a flurry of guys that I was struggling to find a way on there. I don't think that the system is that deep. I think that if they had held off from making a lot of the trades that they made over the course of the previous, say, 12 months, where they moved guys like Yoan Durant, Gabriel Maciel, Curtis Taylor, Colin Poche, Sam McWilliams, that would have made it a whole lot harder. Tommy Eveld is another, Wei Jie Huang, Michael Perez. There were a lot. They moved a lot of players trying to take advantage of that window, like I said. So that kind of opened it up a little bit for me. I do feel like they have, what, I think seven or eight of the top 80 picks in next year's draft. It could be a really difficult list to put together next year.
Absolutely. One final guy we do need to ask about just because the prominence of him was Paven Smith, top 10 overall pick a year ago. Did not finish in the top 10 prospects of the Diamondbacks list this year. You can see where he is if you buy the prospect handbook, but you'll see, you know, not only was he not in the top 10, he wasn't 11, 12, or 13 either. I know the type of feedback I got in his season. There was a little bit more improvement toward the end of the year, and he did go play in the Arizona Fall League. Overall, what was the kind of sense you got on him and where he stands now within the organization?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people were disappointed by the showing. I think a lot of scouts are still hesitant to bury him entirely. You know, I mean, a guy that's picked that high in the draft, number 7 overall, a guy that hits that much at a you know, a tough conference and a tough league in college. I think everybody wants to give him credit for that, and I think everybody's cognizant of the pressures that come along with being taken that high. That are put on you by others and that you put on yourself to live up to those expectations. So, you know, baseball is such a difficult game, and everybody is aware of that they kind of want to cut him some slack. But the, you know, kind of lack of impact that he showed as a hitter, just kind of the middling athleticism, the kind of back to his offensive profile, kind of the lack of aggressiveness that he showed at times at the plate for a lot of people, that was a concern. And the people that even were high on him or you know, at least like positive, weren't overly positive. You know, I mean, they were like looking at him in sort of a bench bat type of profile or a, you know, second division at best type of regular first baseman, sort of in the James Loney mold. You know, that's a pretty disappointing player for a top 10 pick. And it's disappointing that it's kind of looking that way this quickly in his career. But that said, that is the sort of upside of it, right? That it is still very early in his career, that he's still figuring some things out, and that people still see, you know, they see the ability to impact the ball. They see the raw power in batting practice. They just see a guy that hasn't figured out how to tap into it consistently in games.
It will definitely be interesting to watch as he moves up to Double-A next year. Nick, just to wrap up here, you know, we talk about the Diamondbacks being in a state of transition. They were a playoff team in 2017. 2018, they were in first place for all but really the final month of the season. You mentioned, you know, now 2019 moving forward, there are still some pieces at the big league level. Jake Lamb, Eduardo Escobar, Robbie Ray, and Zach Greinke are still in the rotation as of this recording. With some of the guys now in this system, Duplantier, Varsho, Chisholm in full season ball reasonably could help next year or two, plus all these guys coming up behind them on the international circuit. In your estimation, how far away are the Diamondbacks from returning to playoff contention, and what's that timeline look like for you?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I think they're still a little ways away. It's just hard to draw, like, straight lines between, you know, Perdomo and Robinson and Alec Thomas and Blaze Alexander to the big leagues, and not just to the big leagues, but to a, you know, contending big league club. And as I said, I mean, Chisholm has questions of his own. Duplantier has a lot of questions, as we talked about, right? I mean, they don't really have much in the system in terms of guys that you can kind of safely say, like, okay, that guy is going to be a guy, you know? They don't really have much of that at the moment. Maybe those guys are there, and we're going to notice that over the course of next season. And also, you know, I think another part of the equation is just how totally they are willing to tear this group apart in hopes of getting pieces that can help going forward. I think that if Robbie Ray pitches like his 2017 self to open 2019, that's a guy that's going to have a lot of value to a contending team because he can impact a couple of different pennant races. You know, if David Peralta swings the bat the way that he did, that's the same thing. And these are all guys that have their years of control dwindling. So, I mean, this coming season could end up being a big year, for Mike Hazen and company to swing some deals, that kind of capitalize on value in season and maybe, further position them down the road. But it's hard to see it being a really quick one. But I don't think it's also going to be like an Astros or Cubs thing where it's going to take 6-7 years. But we'll just have to see. It really does depend on the decisions they make. And as I mentioned earlier, they've got that draft coming up. It's going to be a really big factor to replenish the system even further.
Absolutely. It'll definitely be an interesting year to watch for the Diamondbacks and their fans. Nick, thank you so much, as always, for joining us and both for your work on the Prospect Handbook and joining us on the podcast today.
Awesome, Kyle. Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you for tuning in to the Diamondbacks Prospects podcast. For Nick Procoro, I'm Kyle Glazer. We'll see you next time.